Hi, and welcome to SpondyCast, where we bring together the best medical minds, thought leaders, scientists, patients, and caregivers to inform and inspire the spondylitis community. I'm your host, Jill Miller, living my best spa life, knowing that how we meet today has the power to change everything going forward. Please note that the information provided in this podcast should not be considered medical advice. We do encourage all listeners to consult their healthcare professionals for medical concerns. Thank you for listening, and we hope you find our discussion today enlightening. Hi, and welcome to SpondyCast. Today, our guest is Dr. Michael Lukey. He's a rheumatologist at Allegheny Health Network in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Dr. Lukey serves as the program director for the Allegheny Health Network Rheumatology Fellowship. He completed his residency in internal medicine at George Washington University and fellowship in rheumatology at the Cleveland Clinic. His clinical interests include spondyloarthritis with a focus on multidisciplinary care. Today, we're going to talk about the heart of inflammation, cardiovascular health, and psoriatic arthritis. In this episode, Dr. Michael Lukey shares his expertise on the important connection between inflammation and cardiovascular health. He breaks down why people with psoriatic arthritis face higher risks, what warning signs to look for, and how screenings, treatments, and lifestyle steps can protect the heart. With practical advice for both patients and caregivers, this conversation highlights how to take charge of heart health while living with psoriatic arthritis. Dr. Lukey, welcome to SpondyCast.
Thank you very much for having me today, Jill. It's a pleasure to be here, and I'm excited to talk about this topic further.
Awesome. So first question here in the hot seat is, tell us a little bit about your background, how you got here, just from a journey standpoint and your focus of your work.
Sure, I'd be happy to. So, you know, I first developed my interest in rheumatology when I was training in internal medicine. And one of the areas that intrigued me was the links between the rheumatic diseases and many other of the health complications that I was encountering during training. We know that most people with spondyloarthritis and psoriatic arthritis have other comorbidities. So I found it a humbling challenge, but knowing some of the advances that we've had, I was eager to jump in and try to make advances in the care of those patients. I also personally have spondyloarthritis, so I've been, you know, involved in experiencing this both from the physician side as well as, you know, having insights into what it's like day to day, you know, living with these conditions.
Is that what drove you into rheumatology at all?
It helped to push over the edge. I was already had that interest and was in my internal medicine training. But if there is any silver lining, I think it is that it opened up the career track that was the best fit for me and did push me further to explore that.
Yeah, that's amazing. And you used the word humbling, which I think rheumatologists, that word is it's underutilized when we describe the rheumatology community, because it's a challenge that I think never ends for a lot of docs taking care of people like us.
Not very much. And I don't, you know, it's one where individuals can be so different, you know, one versus another, that it really does have to be individualized care.
Yeah. So most people think of psoriatic arthritis as a joint problem. Or how do you explain like how inflammation affects the heart and the blood vessels and not just the joints and psoriatic?
Yes, it's often a surprise to some of my patients when I'm bringing that up. It's often the first time that a doctor, I think, has been broaching that subject with them. We know that psoriasis, skin-limited psoriasis, as well as psoriatic arthritis with a joint inflammation, that these can be drivers of other health problems and principally cardiovascular disease. This seems to have gotten more attention in recent years. I think there's been increased awareness in the general public of that impact of chronic inflammation on other aspects of health, whether that be, you know, malignant conditions or cardiovascular conditions or metabolic conditions. It plays a role throughout our health. And I think that's been increasingly recognized over time. That said, on clinic visits where someone's seeing a physician, they may be focusing in rheumatology on the joint manifestations or in dermatology on the skin manifestations. And sometimes these other processes can fly under the radar or go undetected for a little bit too long.
All right, we're going to talk about that in a minute because I want to come to that because I think there's this great systems conversation in there. But first, what is it specifically that makes people with PSA at higher risk of heart disease compared to the general population?
So that's a big question that we're still learning about. We definitely see multiple pathways at play. So many of these patients with psoriatic arthritis and other forms of spondyloarthritis, they have more what are referred to as traditional risk factors for cardiovascular disease. They may have more levels of high cholesterol, more frequency of diabetes or prediabetes, more correlation with elevated blood pressures. And the reasons for that can be multifactorial. Sometimes it's medication, sometimes it's other lifestyle factors, sometimes it's the impact of disease itself. But they have some of these well-recognized risk factors. Beyond that, the inflammatory components, what's going on with the immune system driving this whole body inflammation, leads to further cardiovascular health. And there's been a lot of studies looking at these endothelial cells or the lining of the blood vessels and how they are changed in the course of this disease. So even without those traditional risk factors, we still see elevated risks and earlier onset, problems that we otherwise would expect.
And is there a list of warning signs people should look out for?
Yes. So my focus is hopefully in identifying some of these problems well in advance so that we can have a more preventive medicine strategy. Certainly, we want our patients to be aware of when they're at that tipping point of more critical cardiovascular disease. And I encourage people to take changes in their health systems quite seriously if they're feeling more winded than they used to, or they're developing chest discomforts. Often in women, they may have different symptoms. They might not have classic chest discomfort that maybe is radiating to the arm. That's a kind of textbook description of heart disease. They might have a variety of other symptoms. So I think having an awareness of having a low threshold to get further evaluation when someone just is not feeling in their normal state of fitness or is not feeling in their usual health can be prudent.
And sort of off the beaten path of where we were, but does psoriatic arthritis and spondyloarthritis and some of the other rheumatological disorders that where people are more prone to comorbidities like cardiovascular issues, is some of that, right? Because we have a tendency to maybe move a little less at times. Does that make movement even more important than the general population?
Yes, that's been something that's been investigated into causes or contributions there. And definitely we all see, if you're inflamed and you're in pain, that exercise and healthy lifestyle can be harder to maintain. Totally. And that's not just exercise. When you're in chronic pain or a chronic inflammatory state, that can induce higher rates of depression, which itself can have cardiovascular risk factors. That can have impacts on making healthy decisions with diet or keeping with an exercise regimen. So I think often we need to try to keep moving. Sometimes we have to adjust from a prior level of activity. Maybe you need to go into more of a aquatic exercise realm, if the physical pounding is too high, you know, it certainly needs to be adjusted. But I think any activity can go a long way.
Yeah.
You know, what I counsel patients is it doesn't have to be you're suddenly doing that hour in the gym. It can be, you know, do that 5 to 10 minute sessions, or try to get that brisk walking if that's not stressing a joint. That all can add up over time.
Yeah, it does add up, and it's one tiny little step at a time when you're trying to improve. And I'm sure a lot of listeners, including the two on here, have been through the ebbs and flows of it. So in terms of curiosity around other, you know, besides the general population, how does chronic inflammation, like in PSA, raise heart risk? Is it even and on par with traditional factors like diet or smoking or family history, or is there an elevated risk beyond those?
Yeah, the studies vary a little bit in estimating that risk, but a lot of the estimates come into about a 25 to 50% elevated risk beyond those traditional factors. In research in rheumatoid arthritis has been more robust than in spondyloarthritis in looking at these cardiovascular comorbidities. And out of that realm, there's been estimates that we should maybe multiply what we think the risk is by a factor of 1.5, and that might not even adjust for all of the risks there. So I think even if you look at all of these traditional risks and you say someone might not be coming in a very high risk, if you're adjusting for that inflammatory condition or the presence of spondyloarthritis or psoriatic arthritis, it can be prudent to round that up even higher or multiply it by 1.5 to get a better predictor of that risk.
Wow.
We still have a ways to go in getting these individual risk profiles assessed. But in my clinic, we have a push to try to measure a cardiovascular risk score called the ASCVD that estimates your 10-year probability of cardiovascular problems. And that can put you at a low or intermediate or high risk. And in those inflammatory arthritis conditions, if you're in that intermediate risk, we might need to look a little closer. If you're in that low risk, you're still maintaining a low risk. And if you're at that high risk, we should look to intervene medically and with lifestyle.
And it's called, you called it ASCVD, is that?
ASCVD, yes.
Is that ankylosing spondylitis, or is it?
It sounds a lot like it, but no, it's for all conditions, and it assesses some measurable factors that we know are risks, like cholesterol levels, blood pressure levels, some things you don't have control over, like your age and sex, and can estimate that risk factor.
Oh, that's cool. So you're doing that in the rheumatology setting.
And we do that in all of our rheumatology patients.
That's pretty cool. And it's those things, right? And I often think about even research, right? Because research is a guideline and it doesn't capture everyone all the time on the journey. And maybe you disagree. And again, this is not advice, but I mean, my rheumatologist often says to me, you know, if your vitamin B, I'm like, well, I'm within range. She's like, yeah, but it might not be your range. You might be at the low end of the range, but you have to take in, you're your own human being. And we have to look at some of those things. So I love to hear that we're starting to measure more systems in the body in association with the rheumatology side of things.
Right. And I think as we talk about, you know, conditions like psoriatic arthritis and spondyloarthritis, you know, the level of that chronic inflammation, you know, can matter. You know, has somebody been dealing with this for 20 years at a low level, or, you know, has it been 6 months but at a very high level? Both of those might result in, you know, different concerns there. But I think we need to assess, you know, that disease activity, that we tend to have that primary focus on in rheumatology, but thinking about how it can impact other aspects of health as well.
Right. Interesting. So what kind of tests, so if you see a higher risk patient, what kind of tests or screenings should they talk to their rheum or general practitioner about?
So one of the unfortunate realities that we see in the medical literature is that although physicians are aware that this elevated risk is there, and the practical performance of some of these screening tests, they tend to be underdone, even compared to patients without these conditions. So I advocate for us really being much closer to what the endocrinologists have done over time with diabetes and recognizing all of the cardiovascular risk there. I think we should do some similar steps from rheumatology with our conditions. And I think start with the fundamentals and start with general health. You know, many patients, this might just be at the start a lifestyle conversation. In those who smoke tobacco, that's certainly a huge risk that we want to modify, you know, as quick as we can. In those who, you know, are having, you know, these exercise limitations, we want to find ways to keep them more active there. We want to make sure that we're measuring people's blood pressure, that we're measuring their cholesterol levels, that we're looking at the impacts of excess weight or the impacts of some of the medications that are used to treat their pain. And those are kind of the first level steps. There's some more advanced or specialty things that can be discussed. I think that's what everybody should be assessing, and a focus on wellness more than disease there.
Yes. I like to, I jokingly call it the spa life. is how I want to brand the disease. Because it is, it becomes a lifestyle that you have to manage just like you would anything. And you hit on, right, it's fundamentals. I'll put a plug in as usual for anyone listening that we love people who are doing research in spondyloarthritis and associated diseases. Because we need more of it. And there's a lot of there's a lot of RA research that we parrot, but maybe it's not the funding we need for people with spondyloarthritis and that umbrella. So nod, nod, wink, wink, if you've got friends in the business.
I'll keep putting the word out as well.
Yeah. We'd be happy to connect you into the folks on the Medical and Science Advisory Board that look at those submissions. But you also hit, I was a smoker for a lot of years. And I reached a point and I was stubborn as heck about it. And anyone who can make it through to the other side, I have a lot of respect for on the quitting side. And we did a couple episodes with Carol Southard, who's a pretty widely known, at least in the Midwest, for helping people through the journey and with or without medication. We haven't really talked about smoking in a long time, but it's something that for me was the biggest wake-up call. My rheumatologist walked in the room one day when I was, you know, getting shots of this and shots of that and methotrexate, and they couldn't keep everything under control, and I was miserable and none of the biologics were working. And she finally walked in the door and she shut it and she said, "Your biggest health problem is not ankylosing spondylitis. It is that you don't quit smoking. And until you do that, I'm not giving you any more of this or this or this. Like, this is my ultimate."
Yeah.
And I quickly told Carol.
Tough love one there, but
it was tough
love. Sounds like it helped.
Oh, I was at the time I was on probably 9 different medications. Nothing would work. I hated taking methotrexate. I barely got out of bed. I walked with a cane. And today I could run a 5K. And I feel better, and I don't take any of those things anymore. And it was a lot of work. It was years of work to come back, because I had been probably, that was contributing to my disease for many, many years. And It's a it's a thing, and diet and all of it is, I mean, it makes a difference. And I think most of us want to live as long as we possibly can, right? And take advantage of it. We just, and it's hard. Yeah, and it's hard to do the work too.
And it's definitely hard. And I think we should be upfront about that, that these are not easy. It can seem easier to take a medication there. But, you know, as your experience shows, you know, we have to start with some of those first steps to help get the most out of these medications. Because we know if we're not addressing the fundamentals, the medications actually don't work as well and have more chance of adverse effects as well.
Yeah. Yeah. Carol and I went through some of the research, like on specifically there is some on spondyloarthritis and smoking and some of the, and we've talked with other docs and experts across the spectrum of sort of lifestyle. And it's really important. It's a big piece of how we make the meds work and feel better. So, and I'm sure the heart has no doubt. And I am curious, you know, the treatments that we take. I want to come back to, because we haven't touched on it, but your intersection at Cleveland Clinic between, right, they're very well known for cardiovascular and rheumatology, like top one and one or one and two. I don't want to say where they're at, but they're right up there. Yeah, you had to have learned a ton of, And probably, I hope, seen where there was a lot of collaboration among those two, especially, I think, probably rheumatology pushing into cardiovascular.
Yeah, and you know, I think that's great where we have some of these academic institutions, and I think we need, you know, to continue kind of funding the basic research being done there because. Yeah. Some of these are coming from, you know, basic science labs that are looking at novel markers. You know, I've talked a lot about some of these traditional risk factors or things we should measure first line. But even when we optimize all of that, we still are facing these further risks. So, you know, ideally we want to be able to modify some of those even unknowns. And that's still in the process of discovery. And I think the other thing that's been developed at a couple institutions that if you're fortunate enough to be near one of those clinics has been the establishment of some cardiorheumatology clinics where cardiology and rheumatology, either they're physically together or maybe they're just collaborating closely together. Those have been established in several places. And the other newer clinic focus in cardiology that I've seen has been that push to a more preventive cardiology clinic. So that's where, you know, I encourage rheumatologists to be involved. As a rheumatologist, there's a limit to the amount of intervention for cardiovascular disease that specialist is going to be able to do. Right. But to be able to get somebody, you know, to that clinic earlier, or to, you know, assess and individualize those risk factors earlier can go a long way.
And in general, is it safe to say treatments for PSA or biologics can help reduce that that risk, lowering that risk for heart?
Yeah, we know that, you know, the extent of disease activity correlates with the cardiovascular problems. And this can occur with psoriasis without psoriatic arthritis. You know, when people who have more extensive skin psoriasis do have higher risks than those that have milder disease. The extent of the joint inflammation also independently impacts that. So when we're seeing that person with very high disease in the joints and the skin, that's certainly where our targets from intervening as rheumatologists and controlling that disease can go much farther than anything else in reducing that risk. So certainly good control of the inflammatory disease is paramount. And we're still learning a lot, but a lot of the medications that we've used, like the TNF inhibitors, they have shown, you know, benefits in, you know, some of the cardiovascular outcomes, or, you know, studies of looking at these adhesions or plaque formation around the vessels tend to be improved with those therapies. And there's some medicines that we don't know the impact as well, such as IL-17 inhibitors. We know some others, like JAK inhibitors, might have some increased relative risk compared to other right. treatments. So I think these are always considerations when we're choosing the, you know, that biologic medicine or that DMARD medicine, what is the best fit for that patient.
Right. And one question really is, and we touched on it a bit, right? As we're all hearing a lot of like lifestyle, and you get a diagnosis of a disease, then you follow it with a comorbidity and lots of advice. What do you tell your patients when they're overwhelmed trying to balance all these health priorities?
It can be overwhelming. And I do like to try to identify what's our top priority at this visit. You know, are mm-hmm. we trying to improve pain, function, skin psoriasis, back pain? Is depression something that's paramount and needs all the attention right now? So that can shift over time, and sometimes you can't address everything at once.
Right.
I think in the rheumatology clinics, our initial focus of what we're trained to do is look at how much inflammatory activity are we seeing, in spondyloarthritis. How bad is that, morning stiffness in the spine, what's involved with the other joints there, how much fatigue is associated with those is one that's sometimes a more challenging subject. But I think when we're seeing that high disease, yes, we definitely want to talk about these lifestyle interventions, but it's clear we also need these other targeted medications to help control that and get you back into your normal lifestyle.
Yeah. Can I ask you a really wacky off the, we're going to go in the weeds for a minute question?
That's what we're here for, right?
I'm having like a moment. So when you walk into a room with a patient, and I mean, most of us are used to like the, you log into your health account and it's got your charts. When you log in, you as the physician, do you see the trend and track over time? Does it pop up and say like, warning, this person may be at risk for X, or is it really just a bunch of words in an electronic health record? That you have to synthesize quickly.
It can be both. Some records they'll pop up and say, hey, some of the patients are entering some personal information or disease activity measures on iPads before coming into the clinic and saying, hey, the patient is screening high in their reported activity, or their depression screen is coming up very high, or they're smoking, or other social determinants of health are paramount. That does sometimes pop up in our records. Other times you do need to go look for it and say, what was the disease activity last time? Yeah. In our clinic, we do track what were the prior medications, so we can see that come up pretty quickly.
Yeah.
But some of it is digging, and that's where it can be, a nice, a luxury at times to have somebody who has known you for some continuity over time. I know as patients, sometimes it's a frustrating visit and you say they just didn't get it, but I encourage people, try to keep up with it. Give the doctor a little chance there to get to know you too.
Yeah.
Because these are long-term conditions that we don't always have immediate interventions for, but I think we can make sometimes gradual improvements up.
Yeah. And it would, sorry, in my mind, I'm like literally like building the product of like what I would love to see if I were you, visually and as a patient, where you could just click it up and you go, look, you were trending here and now you're falling off the cliff. Let's go fix that.
And everybody loves to see when they have, you know, a bad cholesterol that was high and then there's an intervention that's low, yeah, or their blood pressure was high and now it's at goal. And some of the charts get color coded. You go literally from red to green. And it's it's a powerful visual to see that improvement. I think there's a lot we can't measure, but it is nice to sometimes see some of these objective measurements, you know, a hemoglobin A1C or a blood sugar that was uncontrolled now in a normal range can, you know, give you that motivation to keep doing on the positive interventions.
Right. Or I look at my vitamin D score all the time. I'm like, oh yeah, no wonder I was feeling like garbage because my vitamin D went from a 68 to a 36. Because I thought I was outside this summer and I wasn't apparently.
Sometimes it can be too much information. And I also, don't get too down in the weeds if you're trying to eat right and exercise and you're still not seeing, you know, that budge in, you know, either you're trying to lose weight and you're hitting a plateau or you're not seeing the improvement you were hoping for in the cholesterol levels. You know, that doesn't mean give up on what you're doing. Keep doing what you're doing. You just might need more support there.
Yeah. And the support piece is huge. We had a guest on recently who I said she was a lifestyle medicine person. And I said, what would be the one thing you'd wish for every person that comes through your door in your hospital? And she said, to start with the smallest thing that you know you can accomplish and then knock off the next thing. And then you do get to a point where you need, right? It's like I can brush my teeth every day or floss when I know something's going on, but then I get to a point where somebody's got to come in with a drill to fix it. And maybe that's the best thing to say.
But it's, you know, when we have, you know, these medicines we use, as I'm sure many of your guests have talked about, that they can sound very intimidating at the start, you know, especially if it's the first one or even if you used them before and it's, you know, you're failing that one and need to go to the next one. So they certainly sound intimidating, but I think many patients, once they've seen the benefits there, they say, oh, I might have waited too long there. So there's a role for recognizing when's the appropriate time.
Yeah. And if you had one wish for the caregivers to help you out in your job, in terms of especially around heart health and psoriatic and some of the rheumatological diseases, What would you ask caregivers to kind of either provide nudges to your patients, or are there things that caregivers can do to help?
So I think, you know, the education components and what you can get, you know, in researching on the internet are such a double-edged sword and mixed blessing there, because there's some terrific information out there and there's some more depth that you just can't cover in a short office, you know, visit with a physician. But there's some flat out, you know, wrong and misleading information out there too. So I do really, you know, value organizations, you know, like the, you know, Spinal Arthritis Society that can synthesize this information, provide a kind of reliable resource based on the evidence there. Because I think that's a great tool and I want people being informed, but I also don't want them to be misinformed by the latest TikTok video that's saying some dietary cure is going to take care of everything when it's just not.
Do you get that a lot?
You know, people, you know, definitely are using social media as a main force of medical education, and especially, you know, those in younger generations are even more adept to be looking at sources such as TikTok or have influencers, whether good or bad, from social media. That's definitely a major source of medical information in some of the younger generations. And that may be who's developing symptoms of spondyloarthritis, you know, those who are, you know, around, you know, 20 years of age. This isn't, you know, always those 67-year-old, you know, individuals who might use more traditional or non-social media methods of disease education.
Yeah, it's interesting. You may show up in a reel, you never know.
That's right.
Spondycast.
And unfortunately, you have to be careful with AI now. There's even auto-generated copies of physicians that, you know, there's a lot out there that you have to be cautious with.
Yeah, that's a good point. I didn't think about the medical advice being auto-generated in a bot or whatever they call them these days. I can't even keep up, personally. That's scary.
It is, yeah.
Okay, so let's turn just a little bit. Research. Is there any new research out there that gives you hope for lowering risks in psoriatic arthritis?
So I think we have multiple avenues of improving care here. So I am very encouraged by the number of treatment options that we've seen, you know, coming to market with the psoriatic arthritis realm, and it is a little bit larger than the axial spondyloarthritis realm there. So we've had, you know, very effective biologic medications in, you know, controlling the skin, especially, but also improving the joint disease. And what's going to be the impact of, you know, those medicines in hopefully controlling things early and not having that chronic inflammation, I think is something we need to be looking at. And then we have the cardiovascular realm, where I think there are more, you know, novel biomarkers being developed or interventions being developed. There's some, this isn't research any longer, but some easy next line steps that people can have done, such as coronary calcium CT scans and going further from just that cholesterol profile to getting a further full assessment of your cardiovascular risks. So I think there's been a long way of clinical advances there. You know, with newer medicines like the GLP-1 inhibitors and the impact they've had, not just on those who need it for blood sugar control or weight reduction, but on potentially impacting the inflammatory process, I think is really still in a more newer or early development. So I think there's a lot of promising things. You know, we need to still step back to the fundamentals, but as we're moving forward, I think we have a lot of other interventions, both for the rheumatic psoriatic disease, as well as things that are going to help these kind of metabolic syndromes that are commonly involved. And that's the adiposity around the weight, waist, or that excess weight, or the blood pressure, or the cholesterol imbalances and the dysfunction of the cholesterol profiles in these diseases. So we're making progress there. It's, you know, not just one field here. It's you know, multiple specialties, you know, looking at that, you know, in simultaneous disease. But I think it's encouraging for rheumatology that if we control these diseases better, and that's where the medications are helping us, that we're going to have, you know, some better outcomes. And, you know, I think it's unknown with a lot of these conditions. In ankylosing spondylitis in particular, there's active debate over what's the benefit versus downside of some of the NSAID anti-inflammatories on cardiovascular health. You know, for the average person with maybe osteoarthritis, these medicines are risk factors for cardiovascular disease. But if there's active inflammation in ankylosing spondylitis, might actually help some of those outcomes.
Right.
So that comes back to that individual decision.
Yeah. Are you still seeing, and I don't know, what is the typical diagnosis cycle for psoriatic arthritis?
So it's a bit faster than in axial spondyloarthritis, because most patients are presenting with the skin first. So you have almost a preclinical disease predictor that, you know, is not there in everybody ahead of time, but is often there. And I think that can give most people a tune in that they have to be watching out for these joint problems that can then occur in about a third of people with psoriasis. Now, that said, there can still be delays in diagnosis. And even in that realm, some people will have more axial inflammation or that spinal or sacroiliac involvement. And much like in ankylosing spondylitis or non-radiographic axial spondyl or arthritis or this whole spectrum, that can be tough to pin down, and we might need MRIs or other imaging to help with that assessment.
Yeah, interesting. Okay, so what is the, if there had to be one thing you want people to think about when it comes to heart health and psoriatic arthritis, what would it be?
I want them to ask that question. I want them to have that on their radar and help ask their physicians, what is, you know, my level of risk here? And if you're getting back a, you know, it's unknown, then that says, yes, with, you know, between primary care or rheumatology, you know, we want to take these further steps to individualize that risk profile. So a lot of times this doesn't get brought up at that clinic visit. And I wish it did more commonly, but I think if the patient or the patient's advocate can say, hey, you know, that's great that we have this plan for the joints.
Yeah.
But what about general health and cardiovascular health? Is that something we need to be concerned on? That can at least start that conversation.
So set a little bit of curiosity.
Yes. And knowing about it, and
yeah.
And I'm sure as many of you guests have said that there is a component where you have to advocate for that and bring it up at that visit. So I definitely encourage people, you know, make a list of their priorities for the visit. It can be something easy to forget at the time of care. And it's not usually the first thing discussed there. You're not walking into the rheumatologist's office talking about your heart most of the time. You're
right.
Talking about your joints or your back. But if that's, you know, number two or three on your priority list, then you can make sure that that's part of the discussion.
Well, and I'd imagine this is a really excellent point. It should almost be a whole nother episode. But you think when people walk in, and I do it, and I'm sure a lot of people do it, you walk in and your first topic is the triage or the tactical piece of whatever's going on that week, month, day, whatever is making the BAS die higher, and not this strategic approach to the long-term disease management, which is always top of mind, I think, for the docs. But we're all sort of under the gun, if you will, when it comes to timing. No, it's really interesting. I was reading a paper totally unrelated, but on people like in big organizations last night, and it was a long-term study after the financial crisis of 2008 across 963 companies. But looking at when you approach something strategically, when there's a shock to the system, how much faster you recover. And I would guess you could probably say the same thing about a lot of us in the disease state. When there is a shock to the system, if we've like taken the right steps, we as humans sort of respond a little faster, and we knowing is half the battle, as they used to say in the 80s.
Yeah. I think that's a really neat analogy. I am encouraged. I think we've come a long way in the understanding of these risks, you know, the interventions, you know, for these, both from controlling those traditional risks as well as intervening on the inflammatory pathways and the immune system conditions here. So it needs a team approach. There's no one thing in isolation here. And bringing that up at the visit is often that most important part.
Yeah, that's pretty amazing. Well, on that note, I'm going to pause here because this has been amazing and I'm so grateful for your time. I appreciate the work you do. There's a lot of us that are grateful out there for it. And I'm sure the patients you see on a day-to-day basis feel the same way.
Well, thanks for, you know, the invitation to talk today. It's been great to, you know, hear some of the questions there, and hope this gets out and, you know, helps some people identify it.
For sure. And tell all your friends and family and patients about us here at Spondycast.
I will spread the word. Thank you very much for having me today.
Spondycast was made possible by donations from the Spondylitis Association of America's individual members, and our show's corporate sponsor, AbbVie. Since our founding in 1983, the Spondylitis Association of America has been the face, voice, and leading nationwide nonprofit educating, empowering, and advocating for people living with spondyloarthritis. Through our extensive work with patients, the medical community, and partners, we provide information and resources to help people impacted by the disease live better lives and champion research to find a cure.